Welcome back to the Zero Pressure podcast series, a relaxed conversation with those on the cutting edge of science and technology, hosted by me, Helen Sharman, and presented by Imperial College London and Saab. The Zero Pressure podcast series is looking at how science and technology can contribute positively to solving complex, interrelated global challenges of today and tomorrow. It's my great pleasure to welcome you back to kick off our third season of Zero Pressure. The whole team so grateful for all the support the podcast has received, and we look forward to continuing our discussions with those on the thinking edge, science, technology, and their ability to tackle global challenges have rarely been more important. So please do subscribe if you haven't already done so. Today, we're talking about the future of manufacturing. Companies across the world are utilising exciting new methods like generative design and additive manufacturing to develop the products of the future. This is about more than just a cheaper way to produce items. It's about creating and manufacturing novel designs, a way to retain strength and other properties while decreasing weight, so reducing operating cost with less impact on the world's resources. I'm very pleased today to be joined on Zero Pressure by our guest, Kevin Zinger. Kevin is the founder, lead inventor and CEO of Divergent 3D, a company that uses some of the world's most advanced methods of design and additive manufacturing, 3D printing, to build vehicle structures. Kevin's also founder and CEO of Zinger Vehicles, which designs and manufactures 3D printed hypercars. Interested in aerospace and cars, of course, from an early age, and with a law degree from Yale, Kevin is an inventor and an entrepreneur with hundreds of patents. He says that he is living all out, learning all the time. Kevin, welcome to Zero Pressure.
Thanks so much. It's my honor to be here, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. Thank you.
Fabulous. Well, I know some of our listeners might not know that you were actually an American football star, weren't you, when you were at Yale? Tell us a bit about your journey from college football and law school to founding Divergent 3D.
When I was a teenager, which is the 1970s in America, there was a route to education, free education, which was being a scholar athlete. And I was a very good football player in Ohio, which is in the Midwest of the United States. And I was heavily recruited as a football player. And that was my opportunity as the youngest of five in a working class family and the first to go to college to really go and get an education.
Didn't you study quite an eclectic mix of subjects as part of your law degree even? I mean, I read somewhere that you studied molecular biophysics. I mean, do you use any of that biological knowledge nowadays in your business?
In thinking through these things, you're thinking of things on a system level and you're thinking of interdependencies. So whether it's, you know, the system structure of a biologic cell at one level or the system level process flow, say of an alpine meadow where you're seeing different elements cycle through against the backdrop of a process of evolution where flora and fauna are competing for materials and energy and creating certain types of structure. Understanding that, I think, helps you look at things in more of a seamless way. And it helps you to come up with, I think, ideas that you otherwise might not.
Now, the work of Divergent has been described as replacing traditional vehicle manufacturing. What aspects need to be replaced? Did you actually set out to replace something that was traditional?
Yes. So we started de novo with a complete digital architecture for manufacturing and then invented the whole system. And that system, like nature, would take a design space, design the right material for it, and then within that design space, add and subtract materials against all of the different constraints, things like stiffness, durability, or in the case of a car as a vehicle, crash, simulate all of the manufacturing, all of the assembly, and come with a perfectly optimized structure. So perfectly efficient, you know, like the very cool flora and fauna you see in your garden that have taken eons to do. But do that, then be able to manufacture it, so using a type of 3D printing with the right materials, and then take those blocks and in an assembly system, assemble them and do it so that whole thing is like a digital desktop system, meaning the system stays the same. The data that flows into it is taken, printed, and assembled, and a different structure comes out. But the system itself is digital and non-design specific. And the idea was, would completely, that digitization, you would completely change the efficiency of structures from dematerialization, use minimum amount of material and energy for much more efficient products, which then in turn use less material and energy, distribute those production assets out. Those assets would be permanent because it would be an adaptive system. The system itself would analyze itself as a system and evolve itself as a system. This is obviously extraordinarily ambitious, extraordinarily risky, but let me start with a clean sheet of paper and target doing exactly that. Build the first end-to-end full digital engineering, manufacturing, and assembly system that's completely non-design specific, adaptable, and distributable.
Can the two technologies, generative design and additive manufacturing, be separated from each other, or are they inherently integrated in your process?
Individual technologies in isolation have very little impact. It's only when they're put together in a system, say, you know, you're talking about a semiconductor plus software plus a user interface and all of these different elements coming together, then have a great power, and then put into a system, they in turn have a impact on the rapid innovation around them. So in architecting the system that I'm talking about, that entire system uses machine learning, from structures optimization to cost performance optimization of how you're going to build an object with a printer, to how you're going to design and build the printer itself, to what material is optimized against that printer, you know, the nanometer wavelength of a fiber laser against the reflectivity of a given material set that you're designing, to how you design so that you're creating objects that can be fixturelessly assembled in a way that any set of objects can be generated, and then those objects can get assembled in the same cell. You're using compute power, modeling, simulation, and machine learning elements in all of that. This is a end-to-end system that uses compute power, machine learning, and algorithms.
And now a new segment on the Zero Pressure podcast, where we ask you, our listeners, to send in questions for our guests. The first today is from Rebecca in London, who asks,
Hi, Kevin. Outside of your own field, what new or emerging technologies do you personally find the most exciting?
Well, I think that, quantum computing is, a technology that is going to be integrated into these other technologies. And I'd say quantum computing as a way to increase the effectiveness of machine learning and compute power will be huge over time. Both the more recent advances in fission nuclear power and, maybe fusion, are obviously things that if we're able to generate that kind of, very high density efficient power, that would in and of itself be super revolutionary. So, you could go outside of that, but I'd say, you know, those two things to me are the most exciting things outside of what we're doing here.
And this next question is from a listener who seems to have some experience with old cars. As the vehicles are 3D printed, does this mean there should never be a situation when a spare part is no longer available?
Yes, that should absolutely be the situation. And I'd say we now are starting to work with a couple of the most famous brands in the world, not only on their future vehicles, but also on their back parts catalog, digitizing it.
Your material itself then has been machine learned. So you've developed for something very, very specific. It's lighter than a typical alloy would be because there must be some gaps in between some of those particles. But also the design that you've made as well inherently will reduce the weight of your part. Am I right? So you've got sort of two different factors that go into reducing the weight of any particular part compared to a traditional manufacturing system.
The difference really is two things. I'll take something that is actually out on the web that one of our customers, General Atomics, you know, which is a supplier of military drones, really the largest supplier to the U.S. government. We took a couple meter long drone that they had, and they provided just the outer mold line, the aerodynamic surface of that. And it was in carbon fiber, hand laid up molded carbon fiber. We took that and that fuselage section of a couple of meters, we reduced the number of parts from 183 to 4 parts by integrating in fuel tanks, hydraulic lines, other features. And where the polymers come in is we develop our own adhesives that allow for automated assembly without any fasteners of these structures for up to high subsonic speed vehicles. Even though we were replacing a full carbon fiber structure, through that integration, we took out more than 5% of the mass of the structure. So what I would say is the machine is literally doing that. And one of the first patents I filed and was issued is basically a patent for multi-component functionally integrated vehicle structures. And what it's saying is these are vehicle structures where you're generating a design that splits things into printable components. And then those components in turn functionally integrate whatever structure can be around them and then can be joined in a non-design specific assembly system, right? And so the way that we're reducing mass is, I mean, obviously, if you have a piece of sheet metal, it's the same gauge and it's being stamped, right? That's not optimization. The machine here is adding and subtracting across the full Pareto optimization frontier of the entire system, not only what the product has to be, but cost performance of all system elements, such as printing and assembly. That perfect structure is getting created. And part of the perfect structure creating is splitting it for printing optimization and assembly optimization sequence and tool path. That means that we've reduced mass to what it can be while meeting all of the Pareto optimization ranges for all of the different constraints, right? So that is part of the reduction. The other is simply this functional integration of many parts into many fewer structures. So for example, on the Zinger 21C, you know, our fully street legal hypercar, that car has what we've patented as a brake node. So instead of having a separate brake caliper with external hydraulic lines and then a suspension upright knuckle, that's all printed as a single piece where you can insert the brake pads and the rotor. And that reduces the unsprung mass of that structure by about 40% and increases stiffness by about 30%.
I mean, it's quite incredible. Yeah, a huge mass reduction, isn't it? Just in terms of number of parts, though, I mean, you mentioned, you know, sort of aircraft, 183 down to, we say, four parts. I mean, that's quite incredible. If you then wanted to replace one of those parts, presumably you'd have to replace the whole of that part, which would be a more of a significant job than, you know, if I've got my ancient old car that's sitting out on the drive, it's fairly easy to replace little bits and pieces, isn't it? Because I can buy a small part, albeit that there's thousands of them in the thing. What happens if you want to replace a part?
I'd say when you're talking about replaceability, a couple of things. I mean, if you're talking within the unmanned, air, land, sea vehicle space, which someone like a Saab is in, or a General Atomics or a Raytheon, quite often these things are not being replaced. They are going in one direction and that's it. The other case, it's the repair of these structures as a casting is so difficult that having that single casting, this is actually a much better way to replace damaged parts. I'd say on the auto side, what we do, say, with a subframe, normally if you get in an auto crash, right, first of all, we can much better tune a structure for a crash to absorb energy. But say you damaged a section, we do it so that all of the different crash elements within a chassis are bolted on. I mean, they're assembled with adhesive automatically in this universal assembly system I was talking about, which, by the way, my son Lucas was the lead inventor on. But if you have, say, a rear subframe and some quarter gets damaged, you're simply unbolting it and bolting a new section. And all of the realignment and damage that comes with sheet metal or casting, you know, combined with sheet metal, that disappears. You're simply bolting, unbolting. When I'd say when you're looking at sustainment, whether it's auto or aircraft and defense applications, sustainment quite often can be the most expensive part of all of the life cycle of a product. You have to keep tooling and safety stock for many, many different parts. Fastener companies, all of these little companies can go out of business. Imagine that for these major structures, there is no tooling that needs to be maintained. There is no safety stock. This is simply process IP, material IP, a system that, you know, then is basically data, energy in some form, and alloy powders. That's it. Like you're looking and saying, you will dramatically change the sustainment cost of all of these things. You'll dramatically change the repair cost of all of these things.
Tell me a bit more about sustainability. I mean, how intimately is sustainability integrated into the practices and products that Divergent makes?
On all of these vehicle structures, which really determine the efficiency of the vehicle, you want to minimize material and energy inputs, right? So if you can take some structure and make it 20, 30, 40% lighter, and once again, it's not, we take the structure that's lighter and then we see if it's safe. It's being designed to be a safe structure. And part of that is, what's the lightest we can make a safe structure and meet all of these other requirements? But then you're massively reducing. Say you're doing that across a large company, you know, say a Stellantis-sized company, and you're reducing vehicle mass by 20, 30, 40%. You're having a massive impact, not only on the material and energy inputs into the manufacturer itself, a massive cascading impact on the infrastructure that supports that product, meaning electricity production, fuel production, all of the other infrastructure that needs to support those vehicles. And then what happens at the end? At the end, if you're simply able to take these structures and re-atomize them and print something new, then you're closed-looping your resources. You're acting like that alpine meadow that does two things. Uses evolution to optimize flora and fauna, optimize structures, and then closed-loop cycles all of the elements of that environment. And that is what the system long-term is designed to do. Right now, we have one system and one factory running. I'd say the system itself was built on those first principles. As we start to scale, then we'll start to implement those elements like closed loop recycling and other elements. Obviously, the first element, which is that dematerialization, and just to kind of super simplify it, 50 years ago, a beer can required 83 grams of aluminum. Today, it's 12.7 grams because of a thinner wall and a different tab. And today, it's 76% recycled aluminum. So imagine you do that with the major structures of the world. That dematerialization and closed-loop recycling using high-performance computing and machine learning to generate that against the constraints, to generate the right kind of materials. There's a massive impact. And as I said, there were two recent studies in this last year in which groups did the analysis of what if 10 years ago we simply had maintained the same percentage of SUVs and pickup trucks we had 10 years ago and maintained it over those 10 years, we would have reduced fuel consumption by over 30%. In both studies, over 30%. That is way more massive than what would happen if we had a perfect renewables world with EVs. We could have done it. And the answer is mass does matter. Dematerialization does matter. Closed loop recycling does matter. But that mass has a incredible impact. And we need to realize that we can't consume increasingly large amounts of material and energy and have it not cost us, no matter whether it's electric or not.
You've been talking predominantly about cars. Are there any applications for defense and security?
Well, what I would say is the core of aerospace and as it relates to defense now or defense period is the future is unmanned vehicles. And those unmanned vehicles need to be produced in large scale mass. I would propose that the system that we created is the only way to actually rapidly design, test, and then immediately go into production with those type of vehicles. Those type of vehicles are the core of the future of defense in the West. And by the way, we have no industrial base to do it today. That extended industrial base of casting and all different kinds of welding trades has disappeared over the last two decades. Now we've suddenly realized that. We have a system where literally Divergent could design n number of different vehicles within weeks or a few months, produce initial hardware for all of those vehicles. I'm relating to aerospace and defense. And that would be done on production machines using production processes. Those things can be tested. If you wanted to go into immediate volume production, thousands of these, you could go into immediate production. You do that today, there is no way to do that today at all, period. You can create a prototype in a shop. Then you're like, okay, now we have to redesign it for low volume production first and then high volume. You're talking about 5+ years to do that.
Have you ever considered 3D printing with materials that can morph their shape depending on certain environmental stimuli? I mean, thinking of things like if the temperature changes or the humidity changes or you apply a voltage, then their shape can change. Just wonder if you've ever done anything with some form of intelligent material. Sometimes it's called 4D printing, isn't it?
You know, I'm aware of it and I've been thinking about these kind of things. What I would say is what we took on was like massively ambitious. It may have been one of the couple most ambitious startup visions in history, respectfully. So that's not our like current priority. But what I would say is that's one of those things that is, as I said, one element of a system. Once you have the system and start to plug that in, then you'll have super rapid innovation. And my desire is to create that enabling infrastructure, like the desktop compute power that allows lots of innovative teams to start to do those things in reality. And that's when I think you'll have a massive surge in innovation, say 10 years from now, as this technology goes from major industrial players in auto and aerospace and defense using us as a digital contract manufacturer, engineer and digital contract manufacturer, to small independent teams being able to do it.
And now the quick fire section of the podcast, Kevin. So answers as short as you can, please.
Sure.
So is the Divergent Adaptive Production System, do you think, as revolutionary for manufacturing as the Ford Production Line system was? You know, that's a moving assembly line concept.
Much more.
How fast can a print-ready design be made into a fully assembled vehicle? I guess it depends what the vehicle is. So choose the one that you know the fastest.
A intelligence gathering drone that's 3 meters long, less than 2 weeks. And then if you want it to go into production, immediate volume production.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I would just say that it's been a pleasure doing this. I've really enjoyed it. The only other thing I would say is set apart whether or not this company that I founded is more or less successful. The technology that people thought was decades away is actually here. I mean, you look at some of the pieces that were published or what you see my son and I standing in front of a rack of dozens and dozens of digitally designed, printed, and assembled Aston Martin frames or General Atomics drones. I mean, that is the future. It is cost-effective, it's environmentally sustainable, it's distributable, and in the end, that's going to democratize and rejuvenate innovation, in my view.
Kevin Zinger, thank you so much for being our first guest of Series 3 of Zero Pressure.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Kevin's work at Divergent really shows the revolutionary potential of additive manufacturing and generative design, and a new world of streamlined manufacturing where vehicles can not only go from design to production in staggeringly short timeframes, but can have a significantly lower mass, reducing the amount of material used and then in operation, reducing the fuel consumed. Thank you for joining us for the return of the Zero Pressure podcast. We've so many exciting discussions to share with you this season. We'll talk about defence, security, technology, and the big challenges that require quantum solutions. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next time. In the meantime, I leave you with this thought from Albert Einstein. If you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you've always got.